This is continuing coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Judge, 22CR117, the Commonwealth versus Karen Reed. Can I have counsel identify themselves, starting with the Commonwealth?
Adam Lally for the Commonwealth. Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning, Mr. Lally.
Good morning, Your Honor. Laura McLaughlin for the Commonwealth.
Good morning, Ms. McLaughlin.
Good morning, Your Honor. Alan Jackson on behalf of Ms. Reed.
Good morning, Mr. Jackson.
Good morning, Elizabeth Little, also on behalf of Ms. Reed.
Good morning, Ms. Little.
Good morning, Your Honor. David Unetti for Karen Reed.
Good morning, Mr. Unetti. Good morning, Ms. Reed. All right, so to begin, and I have all the motions in limine. I'll talk about how exactly we'll go through them in a minute. But first, so in reviewing the motions in limine, I mean, clearly the defendant has an absolute right, a constitutional right, to present a third-party culprit defense, but counsel is well aware that that is not without limit, right, from the case law. Now, the defendant has stood here, defense counsel has stood in this court repeatedly, stood here and in other venues and in their pleadings, espousing various third-party culprit theories or scenarios. But now that it's time to actually try the case in the courtroom, I don't have a motion from the defense to admit third-party culprit testimony. So, and as you're well aware, I have to make findings before any mention of any third-party culprit evidence or even an opening goes before the jurors. In order to admit it, given that I have no information at all, I mean, I don't know who the third-party culprit is, even after reading 4,500 pages of discovery. I don't know what motive a third-party culprit might have. I don't know how it's relevant. I don't know if it's remote or if it's current. I don't know if it's speculative or if it's relevant. I don't know if it will prejudice or confuse the jury. And if it's hearsay, I have a whole other series of factors I have to consider. So, Mr. Unetti, are you pursuing a third-party culprit defense?
We are, Your Honor, and I'm prepared to address that. The Commonwealth has raised the issue, and I am prepared to address that today.
So you filed your motions first, and you did not raise it. So if the Commonwealth had not raised it, you did not move to introduce it, correct? I have no motion from
you about it.
No,
I understand. I understand, Your Honor. If you'd like something in writing for us, we can do that. I have a full argument prepared.
All right, so who is the third-party culprit?
We are under no obligation to name any specific third-party culprit.
How am I supposed to? So you're prepared to argue all this?
I'm prepared to argue it, Judge.
All right, so we will get to that when we get to the Commonwealth's motion.
That's fine.
Now, the second thing I want to address, because, again, it's very important at this point, the motion regarding the DNA, regarding excluding the DNA. Mr. Lally, why should I not allow that motion?
For a couple reasons, Your Honor. Number one, what I can provide to the court by way of update is that most of the testing with regard to that item is complete. So first and foremost, the item is hair that was confirmed by the Bode testing prior to them conducting any sort of mitochondrial testing. The mitochondrial profile, the partial profile that was generated in regard to the hair sample is complete. The mitochondrial DNA profile in regard to Mr. O'Keefe's sample is complete. The preliminary analysis that I received by way of email from Bode yesterday indicated that they were consistent with each other. I asked for some sort of preliminary report or something that I could share with counsel based on their lab's accreditation. That does not permit them to release anything by way of a report prior to it going through a full review process. My understanding is that not only that process, but the entire lab file should be produced by Tuesday. On top of that, what I would state as far as any sort of prejudice to the definitive ears that they've suffered as a result of that. There is still zero reciprocal discovery that I've received in regard to anything from counsel. And then part of the delay, at least a portion of the delay in this specific testing, as the court is aware, as you've had a chance to review Bode Technologies' observance policy as far as outside experts, there was a significant delay in hearing from counsel and for the defendant in regard to whether or not they wish to have someone present prior.
How long a delay?
I believe it was at least several weeks, if not a month. I mean, we spoke about it in person in December, and I don't believe that
my order was in November.
Correct. So when we received your order was in November. What took a little time on our part was to get the samples taken from the troopers in regard to the other testing, and in order to get all of those items shipped and transported from the MSPCL to Lorton, Virginia, to Bode.
When was that done?
Late November.
Go ahead.
Then there was a evidence viewing, which both counsel attended. We spoke about it there. I think that was December 1st. And then I waited a few weeks, never heard back, followed up on it, and eventually heard back with regard to them not wishing to have anybody present for that.
When was that?
I don't have a specific date offhand, but
I need you to find it.
I can.
All right. So I didn't know that the defendant decided not to have somebody there.
Right.
And that prolonged it. They weren't able to go forward, right?
Yes.
How long will it take you to find that information?
Shouldn't take too long. I would need to check my email.
All right, I'm going to take a 5-minute recess.
Thank you.
You are muted.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm going to I was speaking here. Thank you. Please be seated. Close the session.
What are you handing me, Mr. Lally?
No, it's an email from Mr. Iannetti on December 22nd confirming that they do not wish to have observation for testing in the hair sample of Bodie.
All right, so that was about a month after my order?
Correct.
All right. And the defendant's asking me to exclude this in part because of the late disclosure of the information.
Yes.
All right, I'll hear from the defense on this, and then I'll give you an opportunity to address it, Mr. Lally. All right.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd first like to address the timeline that Mr. Lally has just explained to the court. First of all, we were not made aware that we were allowed to test based on Bodie's protocols and procedures until December 1st. We were given a letter saying it would cost $21,000 for our expert to sit in on that testing. We reviewed that letter. We told Mr. Lally that it was most likely we were not going to have someone independently watch the testing because of the price.
When was that?
December 1st.
When? December 1st?
On December 1st. Okay. We confirmed that in writing when he emailed us again on December 22nd. And I would note for the court that Bodie did not receive the hair from the Commonwealth until January 11th.
Okay.
So there was no delay on our part. As the court knows, to date we have received no reports from the Commonwealth regarding Bodie Technologies' analysis of the DNA. The Commonwealth has engaged in repeated and inexcusable delays regarding the testing of this particular item of evidence, which at this point is sanctionable. The hair has been in law enforcement custody for more than 2 years, Your Honor. On February 1st, 2022, Massachusetts State Police criminalist Maureen Hartnett purportedly recovered a hair from the bumper of Ms. Reed's vehicle. For a full year, the Commonwealth did nothing. Finally, on March 6, 2023, criminalist Maureen Hartnett got around for the first time.
Sorry, criminalist department? Is that what you said?
Criminalist Maureen Hartnett.
Okay, yes.
Got around to conducting a visual inspection of that hair for the very first time. On March 6, 2023, she opined that it appeared to be human. However, subsequent discovery produced by the Commonwealth revealed that she had failed her proficiency test in that precise subject matter only 1 month prior. Then, on August 25th, 2023, the Commonwealth submitted that hair to the Massachusetts State Police Lab for DNA testing, and it was forensically determined that no human DNA was detected. Almost 6 months later, the Commonwealth made their third attempt to find evidence establishing that the hair was somehow probative in this case. It is now 4 days before trial, and we were told that we're going to receive this on the day trial is set to begin. Pursuant to Massachusetts Rule of Criminal Procedure 14C, Subdivisions 1 and 2, the court has the discretion to exclude evidence based on the Commonwealth's failure to comply with its discovery obligations. There's no excuse for a 2-year delay. We immediately conferred with counsel when he notified us as to what the requirements were going to be if we decided to have an expert present for testing. We got back to him the day that he emailed us following up about that. And they didn't even bother sending the hair to the lab until weeks later. So I don't think it's fair to blame the defense for a 2-year delay in this regard. As the court may know from the notices of discovery, we've received an overwhelming amount of evidence. This week, last week, the week before that, we're on the eve of trial. It is not fair to throw at us yet another item of evidence that we have to retain an expert to assess. We have to review, we have to make tactical decisions. That's not a fair position to put the defense in. We've been asking for a continuance. I think the only fair thing, if the court is going to force us to go to trial, is to exclude this evidence.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Lally?
Yes, Your Honor. Again, not faulting counsel for any sort of 2-year delay period, but there was a period of time, given sort of the close nature of when the Commonwealth is receiving this information, that a couple weeks, or a few weeks in this case, do matter. The other point I would make as far as, again, as far as the defendant being prejudiced. This isn't evidence that I anticipate introducing in the first day, the first week, or probably not even the first month of trial. So whatever time counsel needs in order to retain an expert, run that by an expert, run that by one of their experts they already have, I don't know that, whether or not they have any experts, because again, I don't have anything from them. So as far as ample time, I would submit that there's more than sufficient time once the report is received for counsel to make use of it in whichever way they deem appropriate. And for that reason, and I'm certainly not asking the court to continue the trial date, but for that reason, I would ask that the motion to exclude be denied, absent any prejudice to the defendant.
All right, so I'm going to take this under advisement. And I may as well tell you that the best way, I think, for us to proceed with the rest of these motions is, since because they were filed so late, which I understand they were filed, just to be clear, I know they were filed by the deadlines, but so close to trial, I don't have written oppositions, really, unless you both raised independently the same issue. So what I will do this morning is, my intention is to hear from counsel, to hear at least from the other side, if the motion itself is clear enough, but to hear from counsel. Then we'll take a break, and at 2 o'clock we'll come back, and anything I can decide, because I know you're preparing this weekend to go to trial on Tuesday, anything I can decide by this afternoon, I will. Anything that I cannot, I will let you know. Then we'll do housekeeping, which I consider, including, though it's certainly a very important part of the case, jury voir dire in that. So that will come at the end of, that will come this afternoon. So starting with the view.
Your Honor, I was just going to notify the court, to your discretion, there are a number of motions that will be unopposed. I don't know if
all right,
you want
so to. What I'm going to do with that is, the Commonwealth filed a very helpful list of what their numbers. We have, of course, the paper number, the docketed number. So when I get to that, we'll just go through those quickly.
Whatever the court wishes.
All right, I appreciate that. So you, well, I'm probably starting with one. You could have saved yourselves time in writing the motion regarding the view, because you both want a view. I will conduct a view. You need to talk because you have different locations.
Yeah, and you know, we've, upon consideration, Your Honor, the Commonwealth has asked for a view of 34 Fairview Road. We would be satisfied with a view of—
So you don't need to go to the waterfall?
I think that we can just agree to go to that one location.
All right, so you all figure out the view. I am going to take under advisement your request of the defendant coming with us. You know that there are all sorts of things I have to consider before deciding that.
Thank you.
So that part is under advisement. Before the end of today, figure out exactly what you want to do with the view. Mr. Lally, your office will provide state police escort for that view?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. Now, court officers, Chief Rose usually gets the bus. So, all right. So, for that, so the defendant's motion, it's our paper 283. Defendant's motion in limine to exclude irrelevant, inadmissible, and prejudicial prior bad character and propensity evidence. So I'll hear whoever's arguing that for the Commonwealth. The Aruba incident, if you will. I mean, I'm sorry, who's arguing for the defense? That's who I'll hear from.
I am, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you.
Did you say 282?
283. 282. Dr. Davis, 282. Oh, this is all backwards. Pauline did this for me. All right, thank you.
Thank you,
Your Honor. The Commonwealth seeks to admit irrelevant, inadmissible, and prejudicial prior bad character and propensity evidence against Ms. Reed by admitting inflammatory evidence of an event that purportedly transpired in Aruba on December 31st, 2021. As the court knows, this type of propensity evidence is extraordinarily prejudicial and serves no purpose other than to assassinate Ms. Reed's character in the eyes of the jury. The Commonwealth has put forth no reliable evidence to suggest that the incident that occurred in Aruba on New Year's Eve has anything whatsoever to do with O'Keefe's death or that this remote and isolated incident was even a point of contention in their relationship at the time in question. And we aren't left guessing, Your Honor. All of the witnesses who were present at the Waterfall Bar and Grill on January 29th, 2022, along with high-quality video surveillance footage from that night, established that Ms. Reed and Mr. O'Keefe were happy, they were in good spirits, they were getting along. There is no evidence to suggest that this incident had anything to do with the facts at issue in this case. The Commonwealth points to purported angry voicemails left on the decedent's voicemail to suggest that there was some sort of hostile relationship between Ms. Reed and Mr. O'Keefe that night. However, these voicemails were left after Ms. Reed dropped O'Keefe off at Brian Albert's residence and after he failed back to come back outside to meet her. There is no logical relationship between the prior bad acts evidence in this case that the Commonwealth seeks to admit and the crime charged here. And therefore, this evidence must be excluded.
Okay, Commonwealth.
Yes, Your Honor. So this also relates to Commonwealth's motion in limine number 20.
Yes.
So in regard to that, Your Honor, this is highly relevant evidence as it pertains to motive and as it pertains to the nature of the relationship between Mr. O'Keefe and Ms. Reed, which goes to motive, it goes to absence of accident, goes to motive, absence of mistake. And this is not a, as the defendant seems to continuously try to pose it as some sort of temporary or isolated incident. This isn't just the argument or the yelling of swears between the defendant and Ms. Sullivan in the lobby in Aruba. This then leads to an argument which both children indicate in their statements continued inside the room in front of them for about 20 minutes after it happened. This is also not a fleeting reference in the sense that the defendant continuously brings it up on her own. Specifically in text communications with Mr. Higgins when she's talking about the nature of their relationship. And it's not just the voicemails that the defendant leaves on Mr. O'Keefe's phone after the murder occurs in front of 34 Fairview. It's also text messages exchanged between the two of them in the days leading up to that in which they discuss the nature of their relationship. You also have statements from the children which indicate that the victim had tried to break up with the defendant multiple times in front of them, asked her to leave the home and she refused. You also have a text communication from Mr. O'Keefe to Ms. Reed in which he indicates that he thinks that their relationship is essentially
run. What was the date of that one?
I believe that was the 28th. Then there's other text messages from the defendant to Mr. O'Keefe referring to their relationship between themselves and with the children as toxic. These are further statements regarding infidelity, which continue on to the morning of, in which statements that she makes in the backseat of the vehicle with Ms. McCabe and Ms. Roberts as they're looking for Mr. O'Keefe just prior to locating his body on the front lawn of 34 Fairview. These are statements regarding her belief of Mr. O'Keefe's infidelity that she repeats again when she's having her recorded interview with Ms. Voss from Boston Magazine. These are not isolated statements. These are not just one time 4 weeks prior. It's not too remote in time, and it does show sort of the nature of the relationship and as it's evolving over the course of that month from the date of the incident in Aruba all the way through until the date that Mr. O'Keefe is killed. In furtherance of that, also, there are statements that the defendant makes to paramedics when she's being treated on scene that the last time that she saw Mr. O'Keefe, they got into a fight or an argument, and she's upset because that's the last time that they spoke was during the course of a fight or an argument in front of the house on Fairview Road. So it literally continues from the Aruba incident all the way through to the murder's occurrence. So for those reasons, the Commonwealth would submit that it is relevant as to motive, it is relevant as to absence of accident, and it is relevant as to absence of mistake. Thank you.
All right. What I will need is exactly what the Commonwealth intends to introduce. I think you've outlined it and I'm familiar with it. If I admit it, it would certainly be accompanied by very strong curative instructions, which you know is my right. I've heard argument now. I'm going to think about this and maybe decide it by this afternoon, but...
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right, so... You were both in agreement on what's the defendant's motion to exclude irrelevant and prejudicial evidence regarding alleged harassment and or intimidation of a witness, and the Commonwealth's for different grounds and different scope, actually. Motion to exclude mention of Aiden Kearney, a.k.a. Turtle Boy, and his pending criminal charges for witness intimidation. So, though you both agree it's out, that doesn't necessarily mean that I agree with you that it should be out. I understand that the nature of the harassment, mindful of the grand jury minutes that I've read, that in response to some of the questions posed by those at the U.S. Attorney's Office, the answers explained away some conduct as a result of the extraordinary harassment witnesses were undergoing. So I'm not sure I agree with you. So go ahead and try and persuade me, but... what I'm inclined to do is keep it out in the case in chief, but Kamala said you told your witnesses not to discuss it. So I'll hear the defendant.
Just a moment.
I guess I would start, Your Honor, by saying that in order for evidence to come in, it has to be elicited by a party. It has to be offered by a party. You're being told that the Commonwealth does not intend to elicit this evidence and that the defense does not intend to elicit this evidence. So I guess the question that I would direct to the court is, do you intend to follow up with questions?
I'm not questioning the jury. It's clear that it may be a response, a natural response by a witness that neither one of you intended to get as a reason for something, right, that I'm not going to sanction the witness because I allowed the Commonwealth's motion.
Sure. So
Mr. Iannetti,
yes.
So it's clearly you try your case the way you want to try your case, and the Commonwealth decides how they want to do it. But I am not tying the hands of witnesses to natural responses to questions. So I'm taking this under advisement. If you open the door, it comes in.
Well, I completely understand that, Your Honor. I will say that I think probably, I don't want to speak for Mr. Lally, but I...
So don't speak for Mr. Lally. I'll hear from him in a minute.
I'll speak for myself then, if the court will allow me, which is that... If a witness opens the door to a further explanation of this, that could give rise to both sides,
right,
exploring that, which, you know, I suppose we'll deal with that when it comes
right
to it.
The way the motion's written, it would be prohibited, and witnesses, you know, I'm not tying the hands of witnesses to natural answers that are the result of questions asked by counsel.
Right, understood.
Okay. Do you understand that, Mr. Lally?
Oh, absolutely, Your Honor. And that was not my intent. If
how the motion reads, your motion reads, Mr. Lally.
I understand. But it was more of a notice that the Commonwealth doesn't seek to introduce any evidence of that. But at the same time, obviously, if the truthful and honest answer to a question that's posed of a witness references that, then I think it comes in.
All right. So I think we're all on the same page. Neither of you intends to introduce this in your cases, but if you open the door, or if it's a natural response from a witness, it comes in. You okay? All right, so... Jim, is 289 defendant's motion eliminated to exclude the plasma, serum plasma, the blood, the alcohol testing? Or are my numbers all off?
That's 289.
Yeah. All right. And the Commonwealth has a paragraph or two responding in one of your other motions. So I will hear the defendant on the motion regarding the testing of the blood from the hospital for the alcohol levels.
More raw courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed is coming up from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Press subscribe so you don't miss a minute.